I want to welcome everybody to the call tonight, and let's go ahead and start introductions. And Leslie, would you just kick it off and let everybody know who you are?
Well, I have the dubious honor of being Rick Reynolds' first employee. I actually have been working with Rick for, gosh, some years now. And when I started working with him and we were working together with couples who were going through infidelity, I began to, I guess, sense a need for the betrayed spouses out there, because a lot of times it seemed like a lot of energy was going towards the marriage or the unfaithful spouse. And so I started groups for initially the betrayed wives, and John and I have expanded that to include husbands over the years. And so, yes, we are the, I guess, co-founders of Harboring Hope. Anything else?
No, it's a great, absolutely great course. And just to begin, Leslie, you may also want to let them know, are you actually qualified to do this type of work?
Oh, yes, my personal experience. I forgot about that. I guess all the technology just got me off course. But my first husband left me after 16 years of marriage for his affair partner. By the time I knew that the affair was going on, he had no interest in working on the marriage. And so, yes, this is very much the journey that I've lived. And that's where a lot of the materials came from, because even though I had a lot of friends and family who were very loving and supportive, I felt very, very isolated and alone because I didn't know other people who were going through it, hence kind of my heart for the group.
And Mr. John, how about you?
In terms of my how I got here or what I do, what do you want to know about me?
All of the above, man.
Okay, well, I also obviously am married to Leslie, as I think she said.
Maybe I didn't say.
Well, it's good to say that then. I am Leslie's husband, and I actually came into counseling full time, joining Crossroads about 5 years ago in the ARC staff. Before that, I was a full time college professor up in Nebraska. But I do a lot of the same things Leslie does here. I'm also a certified sex therapist, so I work with all sorts of problems with sexuality, both within and without the context of infidelity. Do a lot of work with betrayed spouses and kind of bring the man's perspective on this thing, because I know for guys who have been cheated on, it's a slightly different phenomenon. And yes, unfortunately, I too came to this experience or to this job through my own personal life experience. I had my first marriage kind of melted down. I mean, not to say it was a great marriage before all this happened, but my ex at the time ended up having an affair with my best friend, or a guy I considered a really good friend at the time, and it was a pretty miserable time in my life, but I just feel really happy to have been able to been blessed with getting to do something with it, with getting my life back on track. And you know, I always say to people that during that time in my life, there were times I wondered if the sky could ever be blue again. I was overwhelmed with fears, what might happen with my daughter, who was only 3 years old at the time, and I was in graduate school trying to take care of a young child. It was just kind of a time with a lot of fear, but obviously it worked out well. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
Good. And Mona.
Yes, sir.
Can you give us an introduction for yourself?
Well, I am Mona Shriver, and my husband and I are the co-founders of Hope and Healing. It's a Christian ministry that works with couples in adultery recovery. So we tend to work with two willing hearts. It came out of our own adultery recovery, so we are survivors. Not only that, we're thrivers.
Congratulations.
Really. hardest thing we ever did. So that's what we do for ministry. We have also authored a book called Unfaithful, and that's due out for a revision, due out November 1st.
And it's a really good book.
Thank you. I think the revision has a lot more to offer couples than the original did, so we're pleased with it.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
And I am Rick Runnels, and I think I'm even older than Mona.
Of course you are.
I was going to say, you shouldn't ask that like there's a doubt, Rick.
I know.
Your mother raised
you
better than
that.
Didn't they teach you nothing in psychologist school?
No, they didn't teach you nothing.
Well, his mama should have at least learned him.
That was an awfully long time ago, to be honest. And so I am the founder of the Affair Recovery Center and had the pleasure of getting to work with people like John and Leslie and Mona. And I began the Affair Recovery Center, for those of you who don't know me, out of Stephanie and I's journey as a result of my unfaithfulness. So this particular call is more for the hurt spouse and the unfaithful spouse. We'll actually be launching in the next couple of months a thing for the unfaithful spouse. So if you're one of the unfaithful ones, you can actually get that call in just a couple of months, so if you want to have that particular webinar. So tonight, we actually have a lot of great questions. And as I was going through this, I was just kind of amazed at the things that were written. And I'd like to just start by reading this first one. And it's from Kate. And it says, my husband and I have been on a roller coaster. I've always had trust issues with our relationship. We now have 3 children, all under 10. Parenting them has been our number one priority since they came into our lives. That time, about the time we began to neglect our relationship as a couple. A sexual affair 7 years ago rocked my world. We stayed together. We withheld any love from my husband, both for protection and to hurt him back. Obviously, these actions or lack thereof have pushed my husband to yet another affair, this time an emotional connection. Now I'm desperate to try to save my marriage as someone else is invading it. My husband gave up on our relationship a while ago and is now confused on how I can want to save the relationship so desperately, 110% now. He doubts my reasoning, and now I guess I do too. I do love him, but why have I acted the way I have for the last 7 years? Why haven't I worked on my marriage then? He thinks that if we end things now, we might have a sliver of a friendship to salvage. He doesn't want to disappoint me anymore. He doesn't even know if it is there anymore. We've begun weekly counseling again to only dig up our pains each week. Should I continue to fight for my marriage, or should I throw in the towel? Our everyday living is just fine. We co-parent wonderfully, but we live as roommates, showing no love or affection due to our own fears. Hey, guys, any of the 3 of y'all want to grab that one?
Well, since we're all trying to be polite here, I'll just jump on in. You know, I guess the first thing that I would say to this person is, please don't beat yourself up. I don't know if you realize that you hadn't really checked back into the marriage or not. I think for a lot of individuals and couples that maybe don't go through a really great process of learning about, you know, what the affair was about and how to really grieve and come back, that I think most people will even unconsciously stay checked out. So I guess the first thing I would say is don't blame yourself, because that's kind of an understandable thing for you to go through, because I think most people who experience a pain that deep have trouble coming back without some help. And you don't actually mention whether you had help in the beginning with the first affair or not. But I guess the other thing that I would say is, you know, if you guys ever had it can come back. And I think, you know, for most of my clients who would come in asking a question like this, you know, I would challenge this person to to try to, you know, work through her fears and get the support that she needs. But I think if a year from now you can look back and say, I jumped back in with both of my feet 110%, that you can respect yourself even if it doesn't work out. So that's what I would say.
Thank you, Leslie.
The only thing, this is Mona, and the only thing I would add is she said, should I continue to fight or throw in the towel? And I would also encourage her to fight because it's a battle she can win. And if either one of them are looking for reasons to fight that battle, they have three of them. Those children will benefit greatly if they can work through this and heal. And they won't be the only couple that didn't heal from a previous affair, but were able to heal from a second affair. And it's worth the journey.
Yeah, and I certainly agree with what both these obviously very wise ladies said. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to kind of add in there, she had mentioned that at one point she made a statement that her withholding love pushed her husband to another affair. And I want to gently and respectfully challenge her on that line of thinking, because
I would agree.
I don't think your withholding love pushed him or gave him any rationale for actually having an affair. I know a lot of people who have affairs will minimize what they did, or they will try to blame their spouse or their lack of an intimate life or something like that for that, but I don't think you need to take any responsibility or blame for him having the affair. I know a lot of people who come out of this. I mean, those of you who've been betrayed out there know that it's like a, you know, this train wreck that suddenly gets dumped into your life. And if you never really had the chance to deal with it well at that time, you can kind of be in almost this sort of shell-shocked, walking wounded mode for years, even for years, where you just, if you've never really dealt with it well, and if you've never sort of had a chance to manage the pain well, the pain tends to manage you. So, I mean, I want you to have a lot of grace with yourself as you're trying to figure out what to do. And, and talking about the kids, too, it's like even in marriage counseling where it doesn't involve infidelity, you know, one question we routinely ask is what changed in your marriage when the kids came along? Not if it changed, you know, kind of what changed, because that is such a pivotal point of change in relationships. So I guess to rein myself in, just don't want you to be too hard on yourself.
Well, and I guess John mentioning those things kind of sparked a couple of thoughts. One is that, you know, your kids must have been born during this time, and as John said, you know, a lot of couples kind of go into parent mode and neglect husband-wife mode anyway. But even if you feel like maybe you neglected maybe who you could have been as a wife, one thing that, you know, we say is, you know, take your part of the marriage. That going back to the word that John used in reference to the infidelity, the train wreck, take a part of the marriage. If there are things that you wish you had done that you can see now that you didn't see then, have some grace with yourself and accept your part. But, yeah, as John said, but I would just emphasize, please do not take responsibility for the infidelity.
Right.
And last but not least, if he's currently involved in a relationship, all I'll say is it's going to be very difficult for him to be objective about whether or not there's a sliver of hope or anything. I find that if someone doesn't kind of terminate that relationship or at least put it on hold for 90 days with no contact so that they can gain perspective, it's hard for them to really even know. And I just hope that your therapist can really help facilitate that sort of separation so your relationship, you can both have a chance to look at the relationship.
I appreciate you adding that, Rick.
Yeah, because he would be in La La Land
because
right now.
Because he sounds like he's pretty involved with the other person.
And that will kill your ability to be objective.
Yeah, just a little bit. Okay, second comment. It's been 6 months since I discovered my husband's affair, and to this date, I remain troubled over how my husband can claim to love me and yet injure me so profoundly. This is a classic question, by the way.
Yes, it is.
The two concepts are contradictory. I can't understand how one care for someone and yet risk hurting them in their actions. It just doesn't make sense. So, Mona, you want to start this one?
Well, I can only agree with you that it is a classic question and one that every hurt spouse has. It is incomparable how someone can do that. But after working with so many people who have been unfaithful, it is something that as human beings we are capable of, and it has a whole lot more to do with the person who's being unfaithful than it has to do with you, the person who was cheated on. When I was first going through it and I was trying to comprehend where I fit in this picture, the infidelity was separated from me as a person. And I'm not sure I fully even understand it to this day. I just know that it is a fact and a truth that very many people who have been unfaithful are able to separate that.
Yeah, and as a very flawed male myself, you know, I would just like to add that you know, men have an ability to compartmentalize things. And I know sometimes the gender roles are reversed with this, but I know with a lot of my betrayed female clients, they find this idea completely incomprehensible. How can my husband love me and still do this? Mm-hmm. You know, and I kind of liken a man's mind to a house with many rooms where he might have his work life in one room and his personal life in another, his church life in another, and his secret life in yet another room. Mm-hmm. Whereas a woman's mind might be much more homogenous, meaning everything's kind of together. And a lot of women, you know, in their own minds, couldn't conceive of having any kind of infidelity going on unless they'd already emotionally checked out from a relationship. Whereas a lot of men can kind of keep that part nicely pigeonholed and try to keep it away from their family, but still have a lot of love for their spouse. And it's a weird thing to get your head around.
It is a weird thing to get your head around, and I think sometimes it can be helpful to maybe read about it. Shirley Glass is a woman who died some years ago, but she did years and years of research. And, you know, one of the things that her research found is that a lot of times the way men do affairs and women do affairs are very different. A lot of times for a woman to have an affair, she has to have emotionally left her marriage first and checked out before she can reengage. And, you know, as John mentioned earlier, you know, as we talk about these generalities, they're not true across the board, because I've had men that was true of also. But a lot of men are able to be very much in love with their wife and also have an affair. And so I think sometimes it can be helpful to maybe read maybe some of the research results to help you maybe not understand it so much, but to accept it.
Right.
Great. Thank you, guys. Here is one. In fact, there was a question on the chat I want to get to really quick. And the question was, are infidelity and sexual addiction the same thing? Essay is what was said here. And my answer to that is sexual addiction, in the way we look at it, is the same as infidelity. Infidelity, from our definition, is the keeping of secrets. And so with sexual addiction or an inappropriate relationship or a full-blown affair, typically there's an element of secretiveness and unfaithfulness where the mate is cut out of what's happening in that person's life. So that was an easy one to answer. Okay, here's a question. My husband, age 44, of 19 years, is having an affair with a 23-year-old since June. I found out in July. I'm in individual counseling. He stopped his counseling because he was getting nowhere. This is his fourth affair. He had one 4 years ago, and at the same time, we got counseling for about 9 months. I figure now we learned nothing. Basically, we grew apart, and he feels his needs aren't being met. We have two teenage kids. The kids know about the affair. He blames me because I told the kids about the affair. Since he continues in the affair, I have asked him to move out. Some days, he is reasonable and says he understands and says, yes, and attempts to look for a place, and other times he's difficult and says it will affect us too much financially. Basically, he continues to come and go. When he's here, he sleeps in the basement and takes care of his laundry and food most of the time. I can't take much of this, more of this. I feel alone because our families don't know. All my family knows is we are having troubles separating and separating. His family knows nothing. Basically, how do we tell our families and what do we tell them? How do I get him to move out? He's made the choice not to end it, so why not leave? By the way, I am married to someone in law enforcement who is an incredible manipulator and great negotiator. So I'm left feeling at a loss. Guys, anybody want to speak up on this one?
Well, I've got a few thoughts, you know, just kind of a few opinions of my own. I mean, first of all, I think he needs to take responsibility and kind of handle his business with this. I mean, I think it's...
Well, he doesn't sound like he's willing to do
well,
that.
Well, yeah, I know. That's what, you know, kind of part of my point. I mean, he's getting all the, from what I hear, the advantages of married life in terms of financial stability and a place to stay and all of that without any of the real commitment and the reciprocity on his part. And so, I mean, I would certainly encourage this person. And by the way, I'm very sorry for going through that. That must be a horrible place to be for you. But
it is really difficult.
But I think sometimes, you know, we often recommend that people not make decisions, you know, out of, you know, kind of an impulsive emotion, but rather kind of sit back and kind of and really prayerfully consider what you need to do at this point. And you know, get some distance from the situation to the point where you can make a rational decision. I know it can be like a roller coaster ride in a time like this that you know, one minute you might be thinking save the marriage at all costs, the next minute not knowing what to do, and the minute after that being ready to really just boot him out. But I do think, you know, if he's not showing any responsibility or taking any responsibility for what he's doing, then I think you really are going to have to look at some possible options. And I do think sometimes that setting hard boundaries sometimes can be one of the most loving things that you can do. You know, that you know, if he were being abusive to the kids, for example, one of the most loving things would be to probably put him out of the house to protect the kids and to really kind of set a line for him as well with his own behavior. But I would just, whatever you do, I would just encourage you not to act out of vindictiveness, that, you know, that you're not doing... You're not telling the family to try to make him look bad or to try to hurt him in some way, but really, you know, do it in a way that's going to be best and healthiest for your children and for you, and that you know, that you do it at a time when you're not overwhelmed with the hurt or the anger or something like that. But that's a tough call to make on sort of who to tell and what to tell and how much to tell.
Well, I would agree, and I don't know what state you live in, to actually get him to move out, you may have to proceed with some sort of legal measures. And I don't know what that would look like. But the thing that I really, that Don said that I so agree with is, I mean, when somebody's kind of back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, I think it can be so incredibly confusing, and I don't know what you'll tell his family, but to me it seems like if he's really not willing to end this affair and he's going back and forth and back and forth, that to take care of yourself, if you can share with your family in a respectful way what's going on, I absolutely think you need that support.
The only thing I would add is to find out what your options are. Like Leslie said, depending on where you live and a whole number of things that we certainly are not aware of, if you could find out exactly what your options are, and that would include the legal part, but maybe one of your options would be you move with someone, a family member or something. If your husband is unwilling to move out of the house and there's nothing at this point in within your circumstances that where you can force that to happen, I'd encourage you to find out what your options are and then determine what you are willing to do and can do, and I would present that to your husband with some kind of a date and just make sure that what you present is something that you can actually follow through on and follow through.
Absolutely, and I guess with her, the option of her moving out, I was reading the teenage kids, so I was kind of not thinking of that as an option. But I am sorry that your kids are in the middle of this.
Absolutely.
And I guess, you know, just kind of speaking of the kids, one thing that I would just add is that sometimes parents in pain unintentionally make their children their confidants. And so I would really encourage you to find some other people you can talk to so you're not putting your kids in that position.
Absolutely.
Or to, you know, to put them in the middle in any capacity, whether it's, you know, to hurt him or anything like that. But I couldn't agree more.
Good. Thank you, guys. Our next one. My husband had an affair 2 years ago. He left his mistress by quitting his job, and for the next year and a half, he did an outstanding job of caring for my heart and working to rebuild trust. He was absolutely amazing, doing everything to make me feel secure. 6 months ago, he started a new job that became too much for us to handle. The hours were horrendous, and many nights he didn't come home until 3 a.m. He tried to be reassuring, but the triggers of the past were too much, and things started to unravel. At some point, he became hopeless and basically gave up on building trust. That sent me into a panic, longing for assurance he had always given me. My panic made him withdraw even more, and the cycle continued for months. We were barely hanging on. He is so overwhelmed, but I'm completely untrusting now, but have finally accepted where we are at. He said he's got he got exhausted building trust. I think his new job was just too much for a couple in our situation to handle. We love each other so much, but we can't seem to get out of the cycle that we are in. You know, I guess as I listen to that one, I'll jump in to begin. You know, if someone is just, if you're looking to your mate ultimately just to build the trust, I mean, if it's his responsibility, I think that may be a bit overwhelming. I mean, I don't know what you've been doing in terms of your own recovery, but I think it's important for you also to find other points of security and a basis for kind of your own identity. You know, usually after a year and a half, if someone's really been kind of working program pretty well, a lot of that pain has kind of gone. So it makes me wonder a little bit in terms of your own personal recovery, if maybe you've got some trauma that you might need to address. And Leslie, I don't know what you think about that, but I mean, this one is really tragic to me.
Yeah, I do agree, and I think you have some good points. And I don't know, you know, if that might be some of it or not, because as you were reading the question, Rick, what occurred to me was the good news after his affair was he was willing to do whatever it took to rebuild trust, but potentially the bad news is their circumstances were altered so significantly she may not have had a chance to really deal with his affair and kind of the daily triggers until he went back to work.
Right.
If
so it's almost
sense.
Like, yeah, it was put on hold until he went back to work, and then they started having to live life and face life the new way.
Right.
But they still, that's when they began to actually deal with their recovery.
So
yeah.
In the midst of an already very stressful situation, this new incredible life stress came along, and they're trying to work it out in the midst of that.
Yeah, so in some ways, you know, if he had stayed with the job and or, you know, gone to a different job, that she may have kind of had the daily challenge of dealing with some of the things that she didn't have to deal with because kind of her life became so wonderful for a year and a half. And so then it's almost like she's kind of to the beginning of it again a little bit.
Right. And it the other thing I would wonder is, you know, given that how much grieving she got to do about what occurred the first time.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because the other thing that I think for the person who's been betrayed, you know, when the person has shown that they really are willing to do whatever it takes, it's so incredibly helpful that at some point I think it's imperative maybe not to look at, you know, trust as much as giving up distrust. Because, you know, to me it sounds like right now he's not doing anything that would give you a reason to distrust him. And so, yeah, but maybe it's time for you to begin your healing journey, and I'm sorry to say that.
Right.
I don't know what you would say, Mona.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking it was 2 years ago, and they worked hard for a year and a half, and then life went back to normal.
Right.
And she even used the word triggers. Part of what she describes here is a normal part of recovery. It sounds like one of the things that could have exacerbated it was an overreaction to some of those triggers, and then they got caught up in this cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I certainly don't know, but she ends it with, we love each other so much. Her husband was willing to do the work. They seem to be caught in a cycle. I would just encourage them to go. She doesn't say anything about what kind of counseling they received or didn't, but perhaps they need an extra, a little dose of help to get them through this cycle and see if some of the things that you guys mentioned, like some incomplete healing, are there, or just a jump start through it. But certainly don't give up at this point. They've got a year and a half into it. They are not so far gone that it's, they can't heal from it. I would just encourage them to get the help they need and keep on working, because it's worth it. It's really
absolutely
worth it. Some people take 2 years or even longer, and that's okay.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing Mona was, that I actually read a lot of, as painful as the situation was,
a lot of positive
and potential foundational strengths to really build upon here. And you know, sometimes I think it just takes experiencing some safety in small things and sort of really building on those.
Yeah.
And you know, and just having the grace with each other to kind of step back and say, you know, the way we've been doing it hasn't been working, or, you know, can we look at some other options for this, but maybe really seeking some, just a guide in that help process with that might be all it takes.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take much to get you guys on a really great path.
Right.
Guest number 27, in terms of the chat, put, how do you handle the significant dates that pertain to the affair, even 9 years after the affair was exposed? For example, her birthday is the day after mine.
Yeah, that's
so.
That's rough. And my short answer for that is to really work through the process of forgiveness well. That, you know, and that's a whole bunny trail we could go down and spend, you know, a lot of time on. But, you know, getting to the point where, you know, you're not held captive by the past, and it's not about sort of ignoring it or whitewashing it or something, but really healing well to the point where, instead of looking back and seeing the pain when that trigger, that memory comes along, say, you know, to be able to say, look how far we've come, and have a peace with it.
Well, and I think sometimes it can be helpful to be a little bit creative. It is difficult that her birthday is the day after yours, and I'm sorry about that, but I don't know if you feel like having a two-day birthday.
Boy, that was my thought exactly, Leslie. Make it, go for it, girl.
Or, you know, have your birthday and then, you know, the day after, celebrate, you know, your marriage, or, you know, do something just really fun together. Because I think part of dealing with the reminders, the anniversaries, the first year is really, really hard, and I think the goal is to survive them. And that can be true of the second year, too, depending on the infidelity. But I think at some point, if you're able to kind of reclaim them and do them differently and make sure that those days don't come between you and your spouse, that they're days that join the two of you together.
Yeah, and I really like the word reclaim, because I think, you know, and this comes up, too, with, you know, finding out that that your husband or wife took their affair partner to your favorite city or something like that and feeling like it's ruined for you forever now. And I don't think it has to be. I think you can reclaim that space emotionally and physically and sort of make it sacred for you again and not let it be contaminated by the memory of the relationship.
Yeah, because maybe, I don't know when your birthday is next, but maybe it can be a celebration of kind of your 10 years of getting past this, because that's something to really celebrate.
One of the things that helped me with dates as we got further along in our healing and the pain was easing, I determined that Gary's mistress was not going to take any more from us than had already been taken.
Absolutely.
And so one of the motivating factors to do something creative or to literally reclaim that, as Leslie said, was because it was mine to have.
Yeah.
So.
No, I like that.
Okay, here's a great one, and this is actually on the one more on the chat, John. This one's for you. It says, I haven't seen much material on how to reconnect sexually with the cheating spouse. I'm having problems with this. Do you have any simple suggestions of how you can do with that?
Well, absolutely. My first response is that's going to largely depend on the circumstances of each case. I mean, is the cheating spouse still cheating? Is the
right.
How far removed are they from the infidelity? All that kind of stuff.
And be tested.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, we always hate to bring this up, but you know, if it has been involved sexual infidelity, that you know, you want to make sure that your medical tests or his medical tests all
that you both are tested
all check out okay. But I guess just you know, assuming that the person's not still involved with it. I mean, if they are involved, one piece of information I can certainly throw out there is to try not to compete with the affair partner. Because it's like competing with a fantasy, and sometimes people ramp up their own sexual life to try to win the husband or wife back, and that's a very difficult battle, and it puts you in a very difficult situation. So you know, want it to be, give yourself permission to take the time to reconnect sexually when it's comfortable for you. And comfortable is kind of maybe the wrong word, but
It doesn't seem like you're forcing yourself to do it to keep your spouse from being unfaithful.
Right, because it's probably going to be a little bit scary going back a little bit. But, you know, kind of what I said earlier, too, you know, I wouldn't want you to blame yourself in any way or feel like, you know, I mean, I agree that we all bring dysfunction into every marriage, but I don't want you to feel like you have to change yourself somehow or to change your sex life to be more like his affair or to feel like it's on you to spice things up a little bit. I mean, one of the things that really makes me almost livid sometimes is when we have betrayed spouses come in and they'll tell us that their pastor or their friends or whoever will have told them, well, you just need to lose a little bit of weight or you need to be more sexually adventuresome or something like that, because that puts the blame all back on the betrayed spouse. So I don't want you to feel like you have to change yourself in order to compete or to meet the fantasies or the sort of the dysfunctional needs of your spouse. But I would reiterate to not rush in until you're really ready for it. You know, so much of our sexual lives, you know, particularly for women, their desire rests so much on the concept of safety in the relationship. And it's really hard to make yourself vulnerable and create the safety with somebody who's just ripped your heart out. So, you know, sometimes it takes a while to rebuild that safety bridge a little bit before you can jump back in it. And I would certainly want there to make sure that there's some reciprocity, meaning that, you know, I think sometimes the betrayed spouse feels like they have to kind of do all the work to get things on track again. And I really want the burden of the weight and the responsibility to be on the betrayer to kind of show that they're willing to do a whatever it takes kind of attitude and that they're willing to make it comfortable for you and they're willing to do it on your healing timeline and all those kinds of things. So those are just some, you know, a few little thoughts, but I know again that it depends largely on any given situation.
Well, and just kind of on a little bit of a practical note, sometimes it can help to do sex a little bit differently. Maybe the lights aren't completely out maybe your eyes are open. And sometimes if you're really having trouble reconnecting sexually, which is completely understandable, it can be helpful to even go through a sexual reprogramming. Sometimes we'll recommend, it's a book called Penner and Penner, but it's restoring the pleasure. And you start over again. And so it's not like you're trying to jump back in full force, but you're learning how to re-engage again and even talk about it a little bit.
You bet, because, I mean, and in some cases, too, I mean, you know, I know earlier we kind of talked about sexual addiction and infidelity, but if you've got a spouse who's been playing out more of a serious addictive kind of pattern, you know, one of the other things you have to look at sometimes is, are they able to separate their dysfunctional fantasy life from the sexual intimate life within the marriage. And there may have to be some healing that happens on that front, too, so that they're not, if they're being plagued by intrusive fantasies or if they're playing out their addiction in the marital bed, then, you know, maybe there's going to have to be some recovery work done by the betraying spouse as well.
Well, and possibly some help with a qualified therapist. Mona,
right.
I'm talking right over you. Sorry about that.
The only thought I had in addition to that is to acknowledge the elephant in the room.
Right.
Your sexual relationship has been invaded. It has been damaged, and it is not at all uncommon for tears to be a part of that sexual reconnecting. And So I agree with you, Leslie. If you can talk about that, if you can grieve that a little bit together, part of that healing process will be the grieving of what did indeed happen.
Thank you for adding that, Mona.
Okay. I understand the concept of withholding love. I feel if I give my love, it's somehow letting him off the hook too easily. It's like rewarding the bad behavior in a way. Does that not make it too easy for him to do it again? My husband two times me once before we married. I don't think there was sex. We were only 21 and 23. I forgave him quite easily. 20 years later, I found out that he's had 8 sexual one-night stands over the course of our marriage. Maybe I forgave too easily the first time. I'm very confused. He wants to make it work now. I'm afraid of being hurt again. How can I tell him I love him in light of all of that? I'm not sure I can love a cheater again. Can you offer any enlightenment?
You want to start us off, Mona? We've been hogging it over here.
Oh, no. Well, man, the first thought that comes to my mind is that you can be loving and honest at the same time. And he will not be off the hook if he can see and experience what his actions and behaviors have caused. And I think it's I think as the spouse who was betrayed, it really is our responsibility to truthfully communicate what that betrayal did. That's the only way the betrayer is going to fully recognize what's happened. And that doesn't have to be mean and nasty. It can be done kindly, but still sincerely and truthfully, and that would be my first encouragement.
I would completely agree with that.
To say something?
I guess what I was going to say, if Mona was finished.
Done. Go for it.
Okay. I think she's exactly right. To be able to say I love you, but my heart is completely ripped out at the same time is completely appropriate. You know, with his infidelity before, I don't know if you guys even talked about it. I don't know if you acted like nothing had happened. But even, you know, an infidelity or a betrayal, even if it's just emotional before a marriage, can actually have an impact on a relationship. And I don't know how you found out about his 8 one-night stands, but that's really a lot for you to work through. And so one of the things I really encourage people to do is, you know, to be committed to forgiving, but you don't have to forgive really quickly. I think sometimes you really have to step back and consider what it's cost, what you've lost in the pain of it before you're able to really forgive well.
Yeah, again, I agree with both of them wholeheartedly. You know, I would just add, you know, kind of what I was talking about a moment ago, that in some ways it would seem absolutely, you know, from a purely self-interest standpoint, sometimes, you know, throwing yourself back into such vulnerability and when your world has been rocked can seem like a crazy thing to do in your own mind, and it can be really difficult to overcome that tendency to want to just kind of hold back and protect yourself. I mean, I would certainly want to know at some level that he's doing, that he's recognized that this has been a pattern in the relationship, and that he has created this lack of safety in your life through his repeated actions, and that he's showing a real willingness to get help and do what he needs to take. But to your final question, I mean, absolutely, I believe you can love a cheater again if they're really willing to do the work and get help themselves and kind of do that. But I would want, again, you to give yourself time to heal your own wounds and to kind of build that safety back and you know, kind of get yourself to the point where you're able to make yourself vulnerable again without the terrible fear of getting hurt once again. But, you know, again, I think it should, the physical intimacy should be on your timeline in terms of your own healing. I would just encourage you not to use your sex punitively.
Or your love.
Right, that you don't, yeah, you don't withhold it just to punish him or just to kind of get even with him or something, but to really kind of work through the anger in another way, and there are plenty of good ways to do that. And then, you know, kind of when there is a sense of reciprocity where you're both giving back in the physical relationship to kind of ease your way back into it.
Well, and you read that question differently, because on the withholding love, I didn't even know if it was sexual.
Well, I'm a sex therapist. I read sex and everything. So.
Everything.
Because I think for a person who's been unfaithful, who's willing to take responsibility, the hardest consequence they really have to deal with is looking into the eyes of the person that they love and seeing their pain. Mm-hmm. And I think if you try to kill your heart to punish him, it's not really going to do either of you all much of a favor. And I think most people who discover their spouse's infidelity actually do still love their spouses. Nationally, statistically, the overwhelming majority of people who discover their spouse's infidelity want to make it work. So sometimes people go, what's wrong with me? You know, they cheated on me and I still love them. And that's completely normal. So don't feel like you're betraying yourself by loving your husband.
And one last thing I want to add. If somebody, and I may be opening a whole can of worms here, so we'll go on really quick after I say this, but... If somebody has had 8 one-night stands, I don't look at that as 8 one-night stands. I would actually look at that as potentially a sign of sexual addiction. And I think in order for you to feel safe, it might be helpful for him to be able to explore that, for both of you to explore that, because it might help you feel safer to understand what that is, which may explain why this is happening the way it's happening.
Yeah, I agree with Rick's can of worms there.
Yeah, it's a can of worms. Here's another question, and I'm going to answer this one. John, you can either back me up or shoot me down on this. This is from Cliff. Could you also address how to deal with the negative internal dialogue that seems to go on during sex? And there's lots of types of negative dialogue that goes on, both the hurt spouse and the unfaithful spouse. I just think it's imperative that the two of you work at being together in the moment. One of the things that I'll recommend is eyes open sex, where you're really looking at each other during sex. If you close your eyes, there's a tendency to kind of let your mind wander, but if you can keep your eyes open and you can stay in the moment, I find that to be probably the best way to deal with the negative internal dialogue that happens. John,
yeah.
Anything you want to say about that?
I agree with that 100%, Rick. I mean, you know, so often, you know, we can go off on these little tangents when there's been that kind of pain, but I think the eye-open solution is the best thing. But what I would add to that is, you know, if intimacy really is about transparency and about honesty and about safety, you know, to be able to be talking about these things with each other, if you're having these negative internal dialogues, to be able to, even in the midst of intercourse, to be able to kind of step back and say, okay, I just went south again there for a moment, and even be able to put it out on the table and kind of offer it to your spouse and kind of work through that. But I think there are plenty of little ways to kind of to work on mindfulness within sex and kind of deal with those thoughts. But I think the eye trick is the single most effective way to do that.
Okay, next question. We're 4 years past full revelation of my husband's 18-month affair. We've worked through a lot of the private stuff, but he refuses and is even adamantly against any public confession toward our 5 adult married children and a handful of our friends who have knowledge of it, some more or less. One of the kids has approached him and spoken openly about it, loved us both, and wants only the best for us. I told him it would add a piece of the puzzle to my healing if he could confess it to others voluntarily, but he sees no point and is now angry with me about my expressed need. Do I let it go? Do I leave it up to the kids to come to him now that it's out there? And our one daughter stated that she will not keep this secret a secret any longer. If asked by siblings how her meeting with her dad went, thanks for always offering such good advice and help.
Actually, Rick,
yeah,
I think you should answer that one.
Yeah, probably. Yikes. You know, the only thing I can say is if he's unwilling to share it with other people, my concern for him is that he's still dealing with a lot of shame, and I feel really bad for him because I think that in many ways the best parts of our stories are in our failures and what happens as a result of the failures, not in our successes. I always tell a story about my daughter, and I hope he gets to hear this, but my daughter, Megan, who was upset with me for my disapproval of a guy that she brought home as a potential candidate for marriage. And in one of our discussions about him, she was crying in her room, and she said, I know that if I choose to marry Benton, that you're still going to be able to forgive me and love me and everything will be fine. But I don't think Mom would ever be able to forgive me, to which I burst out laughing because, you know, I know Stephanie and what she's capable of forgiving. And she asked me, she said, why are you laughing? And I said, well, someday when you know our full story, and until you know our full story, you're never going to have an idea of what your mother is capable of. And I believe that Stephanie's best characteristics, and in some ways even mine, are best displayed against my failures, not against the pretense that we've been okay, but how we were able to navigate very, very difficult circumstances. And, you know, for you, I would think that, you know, and for your daughter, your best qualities and potentially even his are revealed through this. So I hope you can move beyond the shame, because I do think it's shame that keeps us from being able to open up about these things, and a false belief that we are what others think. And the reality is we are not. The very grace of God is displayed, I think, oftentimes by how we've been able to move beyond these things. The rest of y'all want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think you said that very beautifully, Rick. And all I'd ask, you know, or add to that is, you know, for him to really you know, prayerfully be willing to look at his motivations for not wanting us to say, and I think that shame thing very much is the core of that, you know, but you know, if it's about fear or shame or any of those reasons, that's not a good reason not to tell. And I am so much in that line of thought with Rick that I think sometimes the greatest gift we can give our children is our own failures and our own inadequacies, just because, you know, for a number of reasons. But I know that, you know, I tended to look up to my mom and dad as almost godlike figures when I was growing up. And now that I'm adult and made a lot of my own mistakes, having seen them go through their mistakes and everything, it's brought us closer. It hasn't put more distance between us. And, you know, and I know not everybody out there is sort of spiritually oriented on this either, but the you know, when I give my own daughter permission to be imperfect by being imperfect myself, I've kind of taught her to lean on a higher power.
Well, and the only other thing that I would add to that is I think when one child knows something that the other children don't, it sets up a difficult pattern within your siblings and your kids. And I don't think that it's helpful for families to walk around with, you know, this person knows this, this person doesn't know that. I don't think it's helpful to the family as a whole either.
The only thing that I would add to any of that is that if this, like you said, you've got an adult child that already knows, so the shame is already there. What he has now is an opportunity to show his children how good people respond when they've messed up. He has an opportunity to show what can be done with a failure. And that's a vital lesson to share with our adult children.
Absolutely.
There is another question here, kind of in that line, which is, how do you know that the sexual addiction is not playing out in the marital bed? John.
Well, I think that's going to take a lot of, you know, kind of honest self-reflection and self-examination, but if, you know, kind of being willing to be open about sort of how the, you know, first what the pattern of the addiction is and sort of how it's been playing out. But to me, the underlying, you know, sort of gut level instinct fail-proof test is the connection level within the relationship. If, you know, addiction or sexual addiction has been called a false intimacy, meaning that, you know, the person may be sexually involved in all sorts of different ways, but they're playing out on a very superficial level.
If you feel objectified, things aren't probably going so well.
Sometimes, you know, we refer to a phenomenon of masturbating with a partner, that you may be having intercourse with your spouse, but in your heart you know that they're a million miles away. That they're really not there with you. They're not present with you. They're not, you know, it's not the two souls becoming one that we talk about with really good sex. It's just kind of going through the physical motions. So, I mean, I think a lot of people, when they've lived with an addict and had sort of experienced addict sex, they often can feel the difference when they're really starting to get healed. They can actually see a different level of connection, a different level of selflessness, a different level of, you know, sort of a willingness to try things differently. But if you're seeing the same old rationalizations, the same old triggers, the same old stuff, then certainly that's a red flag.
Yeah, because if you're married to a person with a sexual addiction and they're doing real recovery, the betrayed spouse and the person who's been acting addictively will begin to see a difference in their sexual relationship. It will be quite different.
Absolutely. John, were you going to say something else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good.
He's just breathing.
Good. Okay, this person writes, I know God hates divorce, and I haven't wanted it until possibly now. After 23 years of marriage and 4 children, making a very long story short, I found out about my husband's past short-lived affair and ongoing porn addiction. That is the reason my marriage has been failing for the past 10 years. I had been lied to for all those years, and I'm now faced with his attitude toward me and his not keeping his word to me on issues. He says one thing, but I see another, and he says I'm not giving him credit, so I'm lost. I can't begin to explain the anguish I'm in. I am in at present with all of this happening, and I want to know what God has to say for me. It has been 2 years since the revelation, and it's not getting any better. Can you help with some words?
Bonnie, you want to start us off?
Oh, you know, no, I don't.
Okay.
One of you, go ahead. My thoughts are not clear on this one.
Okay. Well, I would just say, I mean, you know, I think being, you know, sort of, obviously, you know, this person who wrote the question is a person of faith and would want her to really lean on that faith and pray about it. But, you know, I know people really often come out of the woodworks and hammer people with that God hates divorce thing in the midst of infidelity. But, you know, sometimes, you know, as we've discussed this issue amongst ourselves here, we also kind of believe that God tends to hate a broken or dysfunctional marriage that's going to leave his daughter in a whole lot of pain if it's going to end up that way. Now, you know, there's always, you know, obviously God can fix anything. That's what makes God God. But one of the things Leslie always says is that the only reason to leave a marriage is because God's telling you to. The only reason to stay in a marriage is because God's telling you to. And so it's kind of, again, putting the emotions aside and really being able to reach sort of a, you know, a objective place where you can discern maybe what God's calling you to do in this situation. But from a purely, I mean, if you're going to go from a purely legalistic standpoint, you do have a scriptural out just with the infidelity itself, but wouldn't want guilt or fear or any of those things to be the reasons why you're choosing to stay in the relationship. But if you are feeling like there is hope, or you're getting some kind of discernment that there's hope, then I would really listen to that, because I think there's going to be life on for you regardless of whether you get divorced or not. That there's going to be life on the other side of this thing, and I just would not want you to lose hope in the midst of this.
Well, because the one thing that's not really clear in this question, and I guess it would be helpful to have a little bit more information. It sounds like your husband thinks that he's doing something,
right.
But the content of your question indicates that maybe he really isn't. Because if a person has an ongoing porn addiction and they have a history of infidelity, if they're not doing something, if they're not in recovery, if they're not in a 12-step program, if they're not talking to a therapist, they're not working on being a safe person to be married to. And as I say that, you know, even kind of tacking on to what John said, if you hear God telling you to stay, then I think that's all that matters. But if you're going to step back and look at this and say, is he doing anything to deal with his addictions, I think that would be a really good question to ask yourself, because porn addictions don't just go away, and infidelity just doesn't disappear. A lot of times people will talk about time heals, and time can heal, but it really matters what you do with that time. And just going on and acting like nothing happened and everything is okay isn't going to bring healing and God's best for either of you.
I think the only thing I would add there is what I'm hearing in this letter, and I agree with you, Les, both of you, because I did have some other questions. But there is something between giving up and divorcing and remaining in the anguish that she is currently in. Those are not the only two options she has. And she said that she wants to know what God has for her to do. One of the things I've had to do in my own life is when I'm unsure, I need to delay a decision until I am sure.
Oh, I agree.
But for one thing that I would truly encourage her to do at this point is to sit down with that husband and say to him exactly what she's conveyed to us. It's been 2 years and it's not getting any better. This is not marriage as God intended. And if that's the kind of marriage that she wants to have, a marriage where both of them feel cherished, and she's willing to do the work to try and enlist him to get some help to make that occur, which indeed may be the things that you were talking about that would reveal what he's doing, because they're not on the same page here.
It doesn't sound like it.
The next questions are very simple. I promise I did not post these. These were here. How much is Harboring Hope? It's $397. Are there payment plans? Yes. There's a 3-month payment plan for $139, a 6-month for $70, and a 9-month for $49. Excuse me. Okay, that was easy.
you took the easy
for
one.
The commercial.
No, I didn't post those. I was just answering the question. But that was an easy one. You're right. That was cheap. Okay. After nearly a year of recovery, I continue to battle thoughts running in my head of a particular event associated with my husband's affair with a coworker. Comments or lies he has told me in the past, even seeing a similar modeled vehicle she drives, rushes memories and thoughts through my mind. It seems any downtime I have, such as traveling in a car, waking up early in the morning, etc., are bad for me. Is this process going to take a very long time for me in particular? Should I still be having these thoughts? My thought is after nearly a year, usually those thoughts go away and then begin to come back at about a year and then go back away again is kind of the normal pattern for people. So I guess a little bit of the question I would have is, have the frequency and intensity of these thoughts ever gotten less, or have they stayed the same throughout this time? Because if the intensity of the thoughts had continued for an entire year, I would say there's a deeper problem, and you're probably going to need some individual work to address some of the trauma and the reasons those thoughts aren't subsiding, because they should be subsiding. As long as, you know, you and your mate are kind of going through what y'all need to be going through and you're trying to move forward with your life. Anybody want to add anything to that?
Well, I would agree with that. And I guess one of my questions would be to ask this person what she has done for her recovery. Because the fact that these thoughts are jumping up when she has downtime, traveling in the car, waking up early, it makes me wonder if she's really given herself time and space to really work through her own process and her own grieving. Because those would be the moments kind of when her mind is still and maybe unconscious things would be popping up. Because sometimes people will, you know, go on with their life a little bit and try to act like everything's okay. And I'm not suggesting that this is what this person has done or not, but I think that's a good question to ask oneself. Have you really given yourself the time and space to get your head around what has happened and really kind of work through it? But I agree with everything you said, Rick.
Yeah, I think the key there is what you said, Rick, about has it been continuous or has it been fluctuating? Has the intensity gone down? Because I got to tell you, actually my worst time was 10 months into recovery. And she said, is this process going to take a very long time for me in particular? My answer would be, it takes a long time for anybody. It's a huge trauma. And, in fact, if you think about infidelity like a death, the grieving process is often about that same amount of time. But the intensity is key there. If she's had no relief, then that would raise other questions.
Yeah, and Rick, if I might go off on a little bunny trail here, I was just sort of watching an exchange on the chat, and something that's very close to my heart, actually, where someone was asking that, you know, and a lot of the advice that this guy is hearing, that it's the husband who's been unfaithful, and here's a guy apparently who's been cheated on, And
thank you, John. Thank you.
I just want to do a little shout out for this guy because that used to be one of my extreme pet peeves. Every time you turn on a television talk show or something, you know, someone would say cheater and everybody just assumed it was the husband. And I know that a lot of the questions and a lot of the examples we've used tonight
have been from a
woman's perspective, but there, you know, we're getting more and more men. In fact, I've had roughly 50-50 in the recent cases I've dealt with, whether it's been the husband or the wife who's been the cheater. And so, you know, there are some differences in terms of the way men tend to heal and everything. And again, those aren't always, you know, universal truths or anything, but I did want to just kind of throw my two cents worth in on that and just kind of validate the pain of any man who's listening out there right now, because I don't want in any way for this to be presented like this is strictly something that happens to women.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you caught that comment, because statistically, kind of men versus women who are being unfaithful really varies among age groups. You know, people over 60, the majority of unfaithful are going to be the men. In the age group of 25 to 35, the numbers are no different. And, you know, Don and Rick will attest to this, and I don't know if this is your experience, Mona, but we're seeing a huge kind of influx of unfaithful women.
We are, too. In fact, for the last few groups, it's been 50-50 or more.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's really changing.
Yeah, absolutely changing. And there are some different dynamics for those men, too.
Yeah. And so I'm sorry that thus far all our questions have been from women.
Yeah, one of the questions, too, some of you have watched John's video, and it was a video I posted under one of the blog posts, which was What Do Webinars and Great Sex Have in Common? And for those of you who have watched that video of John, there are several questions can you watch those videos? And actually, those videos are part of the aftercare program for 911 Marriage and EMS. However, we can probably package something for Harboring Hope. John and Leslie, let's talk about that so that, you know, maybe we could put together some of the things or maybe create something as a little bit of an aftercare program for that group also.
No, I'd love to talk about that, and I'm touched someone found something useful in anything I said. So.
Well, no, he's very good and very knowledgeable, so I appreciate the question, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and that is an area that probably we haven't addressed enough, I think, and that's something maybe we can look at or maybe creating some additional resources for.
Yeah, because one of the things we've actually talked about is maybe doing a second level Harboring Hope, but that's kind of not right in the immediate future. But yeah, thank you for those questions.
And I just want to say, too, about the, like John, I'm probably running 50-50. Male-female right now. So I certainly don't. For those of you that are on the call that are guys, I think you would find some of the comments from the male Harboring Hope participants in this last run. I actually thought that was probably our most fascinating group. I mean, those guys did some amazing writing.
They did.
And
they really became very, very close because, you know, they didn't have much support outside of that group of men.
No, I mean, one of the toughest things, I mean, it's tough for anybody, but for guys, there's always that question, who do I turn to? Who do I tell? Because there's still this kind of myth in our society that, you know, that a real man will be able to keep his woman. And you know, if you could, it's just like with Leslie's women's groups. I mean, if you could see or interact with some of the men we've worked with, these are some really great guys who have been cheated on. And it wasn't anything about them or anything wrong with them. I mean, you know, oftentimes a lot of people look at them and go, you know, their wives must have been crazy.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're bringing that out, John, because, you know, in my experience, and I'm sure it's true of you also, Mona, mm-hmm. The betrayed spouses often feel like they're carrying the stigma for having not been enough.
Oh, absolutely.
But the people in our group are the most intelligent, successful, good-looking, kind people you would ever meet. And so there's just a huge myth in our society that if somebody's unfaithful, that somehow their spouse is deficient. And please do not carry that stigma.
Let's do one last question here. A few days ago, I cornered my husband to talk. I asked him if he would give me access to his emails and passwords. He said he'd have to think about it. I found a new email for him earlier that morning. I explained to him that the emotional needs connection that he had made with the other woman is what I've been needing all along. I was trying to explain how her existence in our relationship is competition to me, since she's getting what I've been missing. His reply was that maybe different relationships need different needs met. What? I'm actually telling him that because of this affair, I have come forward to fight for my marriage and the needs I need to have met. Am I doing this all for the wrong reason? I do love him, but mention to him that I think it's time to separate. Help.
You want
to start us off? Sure. Boy, got plenty of hot air, but, you know, if infidelity is about the keeping of secrets and he's got a demonstrated pattern of keeping secrets that have been detrimental to the marriage, I think it's absolutely not only kind of understandable but imperative that that there be a standard of complete transparency right now. I don't think he has the right to conceal anything.
And I think that's true of marriage in general.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, again, you know, depending on what – you want to be very, very discerning about kind of where you go from here and not make any sort of knee-jerk reactions to it. But if he's unwilling to do that, then you know, I would really prayerfully consider setting some hard boundaries.
Well, because an emotional affair can destroy a marriage every bit as much as a sexual affair. And going back to Shirley Glass, you know, she talks about the impact of any kind of infidelity, and Rick's definition of infidelity is the keeping of secrets. So she says, you know, if you want to know whether it's an affair or not, ask the betrayed partner whether it feels like an affair.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. She asked if she was doing this for all the wrong reasons, and she was talking at some length about having her needs met. The only thing I would encourage her to consider is exactly what you guys brought up, which is the secrecy. Her husband is unwilling to be transparently honest with her, and that would concern me a whole lot more than whether or not we were meeting each other's needs.
Right, because, you know, I think in a good marriage that the issues of privacy are very, very different than other relationships.
Yes.
And we're bumping up toward the end of our time here. We've only gotten through about a quarter of the questions. So, Leslie, since you began us, is there any kind of final thing you would like to shout out to the group tonight?
Well, I guess the thing that I would just say in general is that, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of this teleconference, one of the reasons why I have such a heart for the people who have been betrayed, because it is so stigmatizing, it is so isolating. You can feel, you know, like you're carrying some sort of brand on your chest that you didn't do anything to cause. But the thing that I would add to kind of the other reason why I have such a heart for the groups is that so often, kind of throughout my life, I've run into a person or a couple that through their dynamics, you can tell that there was infidelity in the past and they've never recovered from it. And so I really very, very strongly feel that whether your spouse is willing to reconcile, and, you know, I think it's so exciting when an unfaithful spouse is interested in reconciliation. And, you know, that wasn't the circumstances for either John or I, but whether your spouse is willing to work on reconciliation or not, I think if you have your own healing, that your life does not forever have to be negatively defined by your spouse's infidelity. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and actually, I think I should let Mona speak before I do. I was talking a lot with her.
Now, I was thinking so much about many of the questions tonight were, what should I do, and am I right or am I wrong? And I just encourage anybody that is experiencing infidelity that it is a huge trauma. I'm not so sure there's a right or a wrong, but there's a good way and there's a way that's not so helpful. And we find, and it worked for us, that the honesty between both of you is a key, very much a key. And just being willing to try. If both of you can agree to try and be honest, then there's a good chance. And Leslie, I agree with you so much about that. But before Gary and I went through infidelity, the only couples I knew that had stayed together were exactly like those you described. And I was not going to be one of those. And I can tell anybody who's listening out there, we're 15 years post, and we've had a lot of good years. And the infidelity, aside from the work we do, the infidelity is not an issue in our marriage.
Right, because if you met Mona and her husband, you would never know that this had been a significant part of their history.
Yeah, I guess, real briefly, just to sum up my own things, first of all, I apologize to those who didn't get their questions answered tonight. But to all of you male and female listening out there, I just want to sort of shout out a message of hope that, regardless of what happens with your marriage or anything, it can be really hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're in the midst of this. Every day can be just a emotional slugfest, just making it through the end of every day. But in my own life and watching Leslie and working with so many people, I would not do this for a living if I saw people walking out with just these horrible outcomes. And life can and will look normal again.
Even better than normal.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just, when you're kind of feeling overwhelmed by despair or feeling like no one really gets it, I just want to say there is hope and there will be a brighter tomorrow.
Absolutely. So thank you all for joining us tonight.
Yeah, it's very much been a privilege.
Thank you.
And yes, and I want to thank the three of y'all for being here. I was going to say my daughter, for everybody listening, is about to have a baby any day. So I've already shipped my wife off. So I'm batching.
Well, we're not bringing you food.
Yeah, I am home alone, which has given me a lot of extra time in the evenings, which Karen can attest to because I've been killing her with work. But what I will do in one of my in one of my evenings is I will go through and try to answer some more questions for you guys, and then I'll just send it out to the Harboring Hope opt-in list so that you guys can know. Maybe I can get to some of the other questions. I'll try to at least take out another quarter of them. I know it won't have the wisdom of the three wisest people here, but at least I'll throw my two cents in.
Well, we have somebody asking if this is being recorded for a podcast that they can listen to later. Is it, Rick?
Absolutely.
So how can they find it if they're interested?
The chat isn't being recorded, but the audio is, and that will actually be available on the website tomorrow.
So thank you all.
Oh, absolutely. I want to thank all of you, and again, Mona and John and Leslie, thank you so much, and we just wish all of you the best. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.